Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Mud Till at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Till Sasquatch, and I am addressing you this evening from the heart of funk land, I guess would be what I'd call it. I'm very funky tonight. I haven't been funky for a long time, so I thought that I would address that. This afternoon, earlier this afternoon, I went out walking in the heat of the afternoon, out among the grass and the bugs, and the water, near the water, not in the water, but near it, as is my wont, and had a grand old time of it, had done it. Actually, I was at the reservoir near my parents' house. And the thing about walking out at the reservoir is, once you start, I mean, you sort of reach a point of no return. It's a big circuit. I'm not exactly sure how far it is around. But, you know, once you've gone a certain distance, it isn't really, I mean, you could turn around and go back, but it's the same as, you know, going on. So I did that, knowing, well, it actually wasn't all that terribly hot when I started, but it was pretty toasty by the time I finished, and it was humid. And there was, you know, sweat coming off of my arms and off of my face, and I can honestly say it's the first time that's been the case for quite some time, probably the first time since I was actively working out that I was able to raise that kind of sweat. And I'm so proud of it, I just brought it home with me, and I haven't washed it off yet. Now, again, if I had been seeing somebody, if somebody was coming to the house, or if I was going somewhere, yeah, I would have jumped in the shower and done the hygienic thing. But I don't know. I'm just feeling kind of proud to be funky this evening. So that will stay with me until morning comes and the obligatory shower is had. So good evening. With that, thank you for joining me on my little half an hour weekly sojourn here. My good friend, and brother, Brother Two Crows, once dubbed me the Uncommon Shaman, and I kind of like that name. Because it sounds cool, but also it very accurately describes me. And the word shaman is applied, I don't know how accurately that applies to me. I know I'm a spiritual person and it seems that sometimes I have some insights that other people don't have. I have some insights that sometimes I wish I didn't have. It interferes with me having a life, a happy life of the type that I see other people around me having. On the other hand, probably people around me, I doubt would take such joy in being sweaty. So I guess you get, one takes the good with the bad. Let's keep on with the spiritual theme. I have been endeavoring each week, so I'm trying to get back in touch and pull this show back to its spiritual roots in a way from just a thing about me whining about everything that's been going wrong. So right off the top, after the sweaty stuff, I'll talk about a little bit of spiritual. Do a little prayer. I'll do a little prayer for you. Again, and I'm talking about a real prayer. I'm not talking about the kind of prayer where somebody comes up and says, I'll pray for you, because they're probably not going to. And even if they do, then all they're going to do is say a couple of words, and I don't know how much that really means. Now, there are a few people, I think I've had, I don't know, I'm not even going to estimate the number of times somebody's told me they were going to pray for me or for my eternal soul, which is just constantly in danger. But I think, you know, my entire life I can say once, I think the person who said it to me genuinely meant it. And let me go ahead and relate that to you. I'm not sure if I ever have told that story on the show before. But it was the day that my daughter got married. And I was, you know, the day before I was not feeling well. I had a bad cold. And so the morning before then, of course, I'm supposed to stand up and give her away, and then do the and do a dance that some do a dance, but dance with her at the reception. It's a very traditional type of wedding, and I was going to participate, and I was happy to participate. And it's going to likely be my only opportunity to participate in something like that at that level, because she's my only daughter, and I'm not likely to have another. But in any case, I wasn't feeling well, and I wanted to be able to perform my duties well. So I just took way too much cold medicine, and it had the opposite effect. It just knocked me out. And I mean, I looked at the wedding. If you look at the pictures, I've tried to hide at least my copy of the pictures, the copies that they gave me, because I don't like to look at them. But I would look like I was out of it. I looked like I was on dope. That's what I looked like. I didn't have me on my. My tuxedo wasn't on right, you know, it wasn't buttoned straight, and I just looked like I was on, like, one eye is, like, open, like, almost shut, and the other is, I looked like I'd been, you know, I looked like I'd smoked something before the ceremony. And I think a lot of people had just assumed that I was freaked out because my daughter was getting married, and I had a lot of comments like that. I said, oh, I just took too much cold medicine, man, I shouldn't have taken as much. And I literally got, as time went on, because, you know, we had to wait around for a while, you always do, and then there's the wedding, and you got to wait around for a little while for pictures to be taken. I had to wait because I was actually going to be in some of them. And then at least the reception was in the same building, which was a blessing, but, you know, it takes a while for that to get cranked up, and then you got to do the dance. And, you know, it takes several hours to get all this stuff done. In the meantime, the cold matter is really sinking in. It's like rattlesnake venom, you know, just really... compromising my system to the point where I couldn't think straight. I had my head down on the table, you know, really not doing well. So I did manage to stand upright long enough to do my dance with my daughter, and then I just fled. You know, I fled the scene. I couldn't leave. I wouldn't have wanted to anyways. I wasn't in any condition to drive, but I had come with my parents. So, and I really couldn't leave until they were going to leave. So I found a room. I laid down in the sanctuary for a while where the wedding had been, like the big open church area. I just laid down a pew for a while until somebody came and chased me out of there. I think it was actually a cleaning person came in. They didn't chase me out. They had a vacuum cleaner. I didn't like that. That was very disturbing to me, the sound of that vacuum. So I had to flee to this little... I don't know what you call it. So it had a TV in it, and there were a bunch of kids in there watching VeggieTales. And that didn't work for me either. So I was just sitting, I just found this desk, and this a table and a chair that was just sitting in the hallway for no evident reason. They must have had to, you know, collect tickets for something the night before. So this chair at table, just sitting lonely in the hallway, kind of like Mudtoe. So I went over and sat and just put my head down on that table and just, you know, waited for someone to rescue me. And the person who finally came along, sorry, I'm still on it, the person who finally came along was my ex-wife's new husband, my daughter's stepfather. Nice enough guy. I had a lot of trepidation about it because I didn't know, you know, this new person who's going to be, she married my ex-wife when my daughter was 10, 11. So you always have, you know, kind of like, you know, who is this guy? But it kind of worked out well for me because they decided it was going to be happy families. You know, they were going to start this family thing that my daughter really wasn't used to. Her mother, my ex, had, after we divorced, went back to school, which just sort of took up a lot of her time, and was also working, which took up a lot of her time. So my daughter was basically raised by her maternal grandparents, who indulged her, as any grandparents would. And so at about 10 came this quantum shift in her life when she goes now to live with her mother, who you know, she's never really lived with before, and this new person that she barely knows. So I benefited from that because, you know, she would be calling me a lot saying, I want to come live with you. I said, honey, if you were living with me and I was making the rules, you'd be mad at me all the time. But it did benefit me, and I got a lot of what's the word when you're in business and you have to give you money, and then there's this other thing that they give you that's not money, but it helps out down the line. Goodwill, that's what they call it. So I think I got a lot of goodwill coming out of that because of my daughter's trepidation and later animosity toward that situation. But anyway, he came along and noticed this is my daughter's stepfather. And by the time, when I got married, this thing going on, a lot of these issues had been settled. This had been, 15 years had gone by. So Brenda was pretty well settled in the room. So I said her name. I shouldn't have said her name. My daughter was pretty well settled in this relationship, and there wasn't as much animosity as there was at the very beginning. And we had stood up. I knew him. I'd seen him a couple of times, and we had stood up and given Brenda away together, which was interesting and didn't hurt me any. I just wanted to be there, and I was happy to be there. But he found me slumped over a table. Asked me what was wrong, and I told him, dude, I took way too much cold medicine, and I'm just, I'm wiped out. I wanted to do so well. I was in tears at this point, and he told me he was going to pray, asked me first of all, which is a key. He asked me if he could pray for me, and 9 times out of 10. I would probably just say, pray for me, but I wouldn't mention anything. But, it struck me in that moment as being sincere, as this was the nicest thing he could do for me. It was the act, the ultimate act of kindness that would come from his heart to mine. So I allowed him to pray for me, and he said, just a very simple prayer, which, as you know, I like. Just wishing, for the weakness of my body to be reversed and for my health to be restored. And I thanked him, and he left me alone. I think he asked if I'd like him to stick around, and I told him I just assumed not be a burden to other people while I feel this way. And he had other things to do anyway, so. I think he was glad to hear it, but that's, I believe, of all the times someone has told me they were going to pray for me, that's the only time I really believed them. Now, I don't, it's dangerous to say this. I was going to say I don't pray for other people. I guess I do sometimes. My intention is not to sort of release that sort of prayer energy when it hasn't been requested. I don't just pray. I feel like just praying for someone when they haven't asked for it is kind of like that group of people who adopt dead people into Judaism. Is it Judaism they adopt them into? It's something. There's a group of people who posthumously have a ceremony for their people who are dead, and they turn the other because they admire them and they think they should be Jewish. I think it's Jewish. I hope I don't have that wrong. And then everyone gets very upset because in the name is, that's kind of a weird thing. You don't want to say it's a horrible thing to be Jewish, but then, I'm not Jewish, and I don't particularly want to be Jewish, and then this person is dead, so they can't really say one or the other, one way or the other. I guess when people just out and out pray for somebody without their permission, I can sort of feel it's like that in a small way. So my intention is not to pray for people who haven't asked for it. And I guess, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I've had a lot of requests just here lately, not specifically directed to me, but you get Facebook friends saying, please pray for my this, please pray for my that. So it gives me an opportunity to stay in practice with praying. But then there's also my own prayer practice, which I want to stay sharp on. Think of what needs to be prayed for in my own heart. So this week I've been thinking about freedom, not big F freedom as in freedom, red, white, and blue, and all that, but personal freedom, freedom to do, to choose my own path, at least to the freedom to decide to seek the path that that Spirit has for me, the freedom to pursue that. I wrote a piece about it, sort of about that. It was at the beginning of the week. I heard from my daughter and her husband. I had been staying with them quite a bit up and back in Columbus when I had business back in my big city that I'm trying to get to and stay at, stay in. And the message from them was that that they weren't anxious to have me staying with them anymore. And no specific reason really given, not that they have to give a reason because it's their house. And I had been staying there much, much more frequently than I had intended. When I had originally spoken to them about it, it was, you know, going to be a day or two a week, and then probably at least 1 week a month I wouldn't be there at all. And what happened with my being involved in jury duty and then my sort of personal business packing up because of that, I'd spent the last year, 5 days there, the whole week, basically there. And they're trying to move, which gets in the way. And also, it hasn't been said, but I suspect this is a part of it. There's a friend of theirs, actually a friend of my son-in-law's, who more or less lives at their apartment. I gather that he broke up with a significant other and that left him without a place to stay. So he's been staying at their place for some time. I think my being there sort of supplanted him. I was sleeping on he had been sleeping on the couch. And now when I'm there, I sleep on the couch and he had to sleep on the love seat. And again, nothing specifically said, but I have a feeling that, that some sort of disturbance was created by his having sort of been pushed aside. Definitely he had seniority, although I think I would have had a bigger place as my daughter's father. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? I had said, and it's still my opinion, that it would be wrong for me to stay with them all the time. As a young couple with a young child and thinking about maybe having at least one more child, it's wrong for me to be involved and to be in the middle of that energy. They need to have their own place and separate from me. So I think maybe that's what the idea was as well, is that I'm just there too much. And I hope I didn't do anything specific to wear out my welcome. Now let me connect this to to the idea of freedom, which is where I started. I felt very hemmed in first by being involved in the trial, got involved in it and then couldn't get out of it. And then with all the stuff I had to follow up on after the trial was over with. And I liked being with my daughter and with my granddaughter and even with my son-in-law, he's a good kid. I shouldn't say he's a very good kid. But I was. I'm glad I was there with them for the same reason. The reason I was with them, along with the reason I'm with my parents when I wasn't with them. I just felt hemmed in by all of that. That there was a. Once again, as in all other times in my life, there's a path that's been imposed on me that I didn't choose. And it's important, half of my life is gone. I need to choose my path, and I need to follow my path. And so I pray for the freedom to choose to follow my path. And I pray, again, I'm not supposed to do this. I don't know. Should I pray for others to have that freedom? I think I can pray for, I'm not praying for anybody specific. I can pray in general that people have the freedom to find the path that's best for them, with the highest purpose being served. Does that work for everybody? I don't feel like I'm impinging on anybody specifically. If I do that, I'm not including anybody. I'm just saying, just whatever. I'm praying for the freedom for everybody to have the freedom to just define what it is that works for them, and to not have outside forces impinging on them. And I'm comfortable with that. I think I can do that. And you know, take what you want and leave the rest. And that's all I have to say about that. So anyway, I only had a couple days on the road this week. I went the first day to have an eye exam. If again everything is hooked up through the university where my main doctor is hooked up with the university, so whenever they make a recommendation for me, referral, that's it. Whenever they make a referral for me, that referral is to someplace else in the university, which is actually kind of convenient, because I got there, you know, I'd taken all my insurance stuff just ready to spend, you know, hours spending, you know, filling out new patient forms, insurance forms, and all that. But out there, I told them my name, one click on my computer, nope, it's all here, because, you know, all my main doctor's records were at their fingertips. So I had, it's been 7 years since I've had my prescription redone, and I've run out of strength at the bottom of my bifocal, you know, where you do the reading. So it's gotten very hard for me to read now. So I just don't, there just isn't enough bifocal left. So it's time. And, you know, I got that sugar thing going, and you are supposed to have your eyes checked from now on time, because it's one of the things that rot out of your eyes, rot out of your head if you let your sugar go. Too bad. So I went, and at first, they dilated my eyes, which was not terribly pleasant, and they numbed my eyes, which is not terribly pleasant for me. I don't like being numbed. I guess the alternative, it's better than the alternative. And they looked, and they did this thing that I remember freaked me out last time I had an exam, was where they put something actually on the surface of my eye and measure the pressure inside. But this time the girl who was doing it was so good at keeping me talking that I didn't even realize she was doing it until she was done. So, hey, isn't that great? So the pressure inside my eyes is okay, and my retinas look okay. They said some of the nerves in my eyes look just a little bit glaucoma-ish. So they recommended that I see a glaucoma specialist, and I pretty much knew that was coming because my mom and dad both see a glaucoma specialist. I think they've had cataracts, not glaucoma, but they both, you know, it's a family thing, and they both have to see a glaucoma specialist from now on. So it's nothing unexpected. I had a good time. And then they didn't do my eye exam. They didn't do the part, which is what I really went there for, which was to give me a new prescription for my glasses. Evidently, you have to be really specific in what you request. I just figured the eye exam would go along with everything else. I talked about, you know, the diabetic eye exam, and they just did the diabetic part. They didn't do anything else. So I had to make an appointment for that. I had to make an appointment for the glaucoma specialist. I got home, told my mother about it. And I was still kind of upset about my daughter kicking me out. I hadn't quite come to terms with that yet. And my mother said, well, why don't you go and see, I'll make an appointment for you just to go see your old eye doctor. And, you know, not, and I'll pay for it, she said. And you don't have to worry about the university doctors. And I said, oh, okay. I'm thinking, my old eye doctor, my God, is he still working? You know, I was a teenager. I mean, he's old then. He seemed old to me anyway. But I guess he's only works to just see his old patients, and I would qualify. So why don't I just see him and have him do my glasses and then have him tell me whether I need to see a glaucoma specialist or not. And cut down a couple of trips to Columbus, since I don't have a permanent place to stay there like I thought I did. Well, I have to go next week. I have 4 days in Columbus next week, but two of them I'm actually getting paid for. I've got my first two of the season from the hospital, where I, long-time listeners will know that I pretend to be sick for a living. The doctor gives me a list of symptoms, and I memorize them, and then medical students come in and talk to me, and they're supposed to figure out what's wrong with me based on my description of my symptoms. And I guess I must be pretty good at it because they keep asking me back. This is the first one of the new academic year, and I got a couple of days of that, and then I got a couple of days of JFS training, Job and Family Service training, so that I can keep my food stamps coming in. So that's 4 days, and that's a lot of days, and you're just driving back and forth. So that's what I had to do this week. But I was in Columbus for the eye thing, and then the next day I had an appointment with my caseworker, and I had to drive back and forth both days because I didn't have a place to stay in Columbus. Well, next week, Chief Iggy has offered to let me stay with him and his family for the requisite 2 or 3 days I'm going to be there. So many thanks to him for that. I hope to renew acquaintances because we really haven't spoken that much since I had to leave the city. This is, after all, his radio network and his radio program. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to check in with him about how he thinks this is going and if he's satisfied with the direction he's taken. Certainly, this is a very different kind of program than the other. The other ones that air on Blog Talk Radio, they tend to be more about, well, they're all about either interviews or taking people's calls and doing things. And I don't do those things. I just talk about sort of what's happening in my life and the development of my spirituality, and I hope that the things that I'm inspired to speak of, that there's somebody out there that needs to hear them. That's sort of my MO, and that's been okay with Chief Iggy up until now. I would imagine it's still okay with him, but it'd be good to very good to sit down with him and go over some of these things point by point once again. Just make sure everybody's on the same page. So that's where we're at. I had the opportunity to sit down and look at some job listings today. First time I've done that in a while, and I found a couple that looked like, you know, things I might be qualified for, things that I might be able to convince people to hire me to do, and things that I might actually be interested in doing. And these are things that are around here, around where my parents live, and that's not quite the direction I'm going to go. And it feels like that's just that next thing where I would take, you know, I'm not saying I need to keep looking because I'm not going to get anywhere without, if I'm not independent. I have to find something to do that will allow me to be independent. But do I have to take something just because it's going to make me independent? Should it not? Should it not dovetail into my path in some other way? It's very much what I'm struggling with right now. And I'll probably have more to talk about along those lines next week because I'm going to be spending some time with the people from JFS. I want to thank you very much for tuning in and listening to me this week. I hope there's something in there that struck a chord. You know, I welcome your emails at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. And I think I'm just going to go ahead and sign off until next week. And I promise I will take a shower between now and then. Thanks once more, and have a pleasant good evening.